Accession number 19068, reel 2.
Mr. Ken Chesson, reel 2.
And they built a hospital just more in the same grounds as the sanatorium, and that was the Australian troops that built that hospital, and they ran it on for quite some time. I can remember that was before I was in the army. I can remember those Australians, and they all had their very smart bush hats, and they were all medical people, I think. But they ran that hospital, and then after they finished with it, and the St. Thomas's Hospital had trouble, got bombed and that in London, and they took over this Australian hospital. And in the last few years, both the places, the sanatorium and that hospital, the grounds have been sold, and now they're building very high class houses in there, and they've got a lot of land, but building very few houses. And if you've got nearly a million, go and buy a house. Lovely spot.
Did your family take any of these troops in, as families did?
Well, we had Canadians. We didn't have any of the Australians. I can remember this was before I went into the army. We had working on the farm there where my father was the bailiff. There was a land girl there, her name was Christine McBay, a very nice girl, and she brought home one or two Canadians, and she brought home a very nice New Zealander. And we had lovely evenings with them. And unfortunately, I think the New Zealanders went to the Middle East, and they had really great casualties. They had tough going, and probably the young chap who came to us, I don't know, but we had wonderful times, really. But it was sad when they just didn't come anymore.
Could you describe the time leading up to when you volunteered?
My friend that I went to, he was my pal at school. He was my pal in the Home Guard, and he came one afternoon. He was working for a firm that were ironmongers, and they used to have an oil delivery. They used to deliver paraffin and household goods, hard goods, to around the district. And he came one afternoon and he said to me, "I'm going to join the army." He said, "I'm not waiting to be called up." And he was just a bit older than me. And I said, "Well, if you're going, John," I said, "I'll come." I said, "I want to go." I said, "I'll come." We went together and joined up at the Holy Trinity Hall by the Holy Trinity Church in Guildford. It was the 27th of April 1942, and they said then, I really wanted to go into the Royal Armoured Corps, but they said, "Oh, everybody now has got to do 16 weeks infantry training." And much to my regret, into the infantry I went, but it was, as it turned out, I think it was probably a good thing. I went into the Royal Berkshire Regiment and to the 17th ITC at Reading and done the 16 weeks training there. And when it came to, I went to the 9th Battalion of the Royal Berks at North Walsham in Norfolk, and when I had an interview and said that I thought I was going into the Royal Armoured Corps, which that's what I had really hoped for, they said, "Oh no, you're in the infantry now, that's where you'll have to stay." And so as I went through, I think probably it had its mixed blessings, and it was probably just as well.
Could you paint the picture for those 16 weeks?
16 weeks, that was very hard, really, but the food was poor, the training was good, we got very fit, the PT and the route marches and the sport we had, it was as it was in the summer months, we had quite a bit of cricket, and we spent quite a bit of time at the swimming pool. We used to have an afternoon a week for the sport, but unfortunately I wasn't a swimmer, and I was making good progress until one day I got two chaps pushing me right to the bottom of the pool, and after that I never really picked up the confidence. But that was we had good training, very good training. We had good training on the on the weapons side and on the field exercise side. And when we left that ITC, I felt really that I was a good fit soldier, and that was after just 16 weeks of training. So I considered it very good.
What was the reaction of your family and friends when you volunteered?
They didn't really think too much of it, but they said, "Oh, you wouldn't have to go. You wouldn't have to go. Why did you do it?" But I was happy to do it. I wanted to do it, and that's why I went. And I thought that going into the army like that, as I didn't go as a boy, I thought I would probably see how it went and make it my career. But as it worked out, I didn't stay in there. My father was ill, and wanted me back, and I went. So when they were releasing the people after the war, I went back on B release and helped out back there, and I wasn't home that long before he died. It wasn't his farm, but he took his job very, very seriously, and my mother and two sisters were living, and my younger brother were living in the house, and if I took on the job that he'd been doing, I wasn't as experienced as him, but I was quite confident that I could do it, and I took it on. And that by doing that, it kept the family there, and it made life much better for everybody, really. Joining up, going off to Reading, it was a bit hard leaving the family. My mother, I can remember, was in tears. And my two sisters, were just as bad, and so therefore I was pleased to get away and get to the station. And a friend drove me to the station, and I said to him, well, I don't know when I will be home, but I hope the next parting is not as bad as this. And I must admit that getting to Reading and to seeing the NCOs on the station there, they were waiting for us all to come. The chaps come from all different directions, and they had coaches there to take us back to the barracks. And I really thought then, oh dear, what have I let myself in for? But it worked out well. We all got on well together. The chaps came from different areas. Quite a few of them were London boys. Others were from Newbury, Wantage, and which was very close to Reading. And then there were people from much further afield. It was a real mixture, and we settled down. We got on well, and when we had our kit, when we arrived at the barracks, and we were very soon put into squads, and they took us to the stores to get our uniform and equipment. And it was a bit, I thought it was a bit poorly done. They more or less threw the kit at you, and when we got back in to the barrack room, there was real old-fashioned barracks, and got back in there, and then we sorted it out between us, and in the finish we looked a bit like soldiers, not too bad. And that was that side of it. And when we had our meal in the evening, I don't know, 5 o'clock time I would think, and it was a cooked meal, and the ATS people, girls that was dishing it up, they brought it out in these big containers and placed it on the end of the table, and the chaps that were there had to dish it out. And really, I thought then, well, this is pretty poor food. I'd been used to much better food. But anyway, I always remember I said one day to one of these ATS girls, well, what is this then? And she said, oh, she said, there it is, she said, and you can please you whether you eat it or not. But anyway, we survived, and as time went on, you just got used to it. But the food there at that time was really pretty poor food.
You say the barracks were old-fashioned. Could you describe them?
They were very long, and more like big hospital wards. And there were no beds. We just had the palliasses, which were like a big sack, really, and you stuffed it with straw. Stuffed it with straw and just laid it on the floor, and that was your bed. And they went off each side. In the centre you had the wash basins and the toilets, and that was all pretty crude. And it was dreadful in the morning. If you didn't get up pretty early, you had a job even to get a wash and a shave, and they were most particular about that. And so they were the little things, or they were the things that you found really being much different to being at home, as regards the food. It was poor food, but at least I could put up with that anyway. But I did find it after having we were lucky. We had a nice bathroom and decent sanitation and everything. And then when I started off with the places at Reading, I thought it was pretty ghastly. And from the barracks, Sprott Barracks, after a time we moved up to a camp which was still incorporated in with the 17th ITC, with the Royal Barracks and the Sussex. We moved up there, and that was quite a modern camp, nice huts, spacious, and we had a very smart parade ground nicely out in the open, and we had a very good naffy there, and it was so much better. I think even the food had improved there, whether it was having the more modern cooking facilities and that, I don't know, but it was a much better life.
What
there
would have been a typical evening meal?
A typical evening meal would have, they used to have these tins of corned mutton. I think that was a Australian product, I think, and we used to have that as stew. You know, just potatoes and the stew, and then for the pudding, it would be rice pudding, or a bit of jam pudding or something of that. It was pretty basic stuff, but at least it was always much better there. I think the surroundings and the more modern, the more modern place and the atmosphere was so much better. And that camp, before we left, it was taken over by Americans, and it was amazing to me how quick they transformed it. They had galvanized like Nissen huts. That's what I was trying to think of. They put Nissen huts up on pretty well every space of ground they could find, every patch of ground they could find, and it was completely smothered in between the huts and that, with these Nissen huts. And we moved out and went to Colchester, and the Americans moved in there. It was American Army. I don't really know their units, but there was American Army took it over. And we then went to Colchester and went into some very old barracks there at Colchester, but not too far out the town, so we had quite a nice life there. We'd got to the pretty well to the end of our 16 weeks of training, and so life was much better, and the facilities for training, and we had the ranges, and really we were all, you know, keen young chaps, and I think we flourished when we got there.
What was the attitude of the officers and NCOs?
Our officers and NCOs, I'm afraid, really, they were mainly then, they were pre-war officers, and quite a lot of the NCOs also, or they were from the territorials, and a lot of them, and really they didn't really have the understanding and the mixing of the men then, because they were dealing then with different men to what they were before the war. I mean, they were all keen to be soldiers, they were all volunteer soldiers or service people, and during the war, when they were conscripted, and they wanted, I think they needed a bit more understanding, and it was a pity that they didn't move a bit better with the times, but it was so so drilled into them that I don't think they could move with the times.
So were they perfectionists?
They were perfectionists to the point where it really didn't matter. A lot of the things that I felt that they wanted, they were so silly about everything being spick and span in the barrack room, and not a bit of waste or anything on the floor and that sort of thing. But when it come to understanding in the field of training and that, I think a lot of them needed more training. They didn't really understand the field work and the training, and the time went on, and you came against NCOs that had been into the battle line and had come back. They'd probably been wounded or degraded for some reason or the other, and they came back, and they were put into units where they were in training you, and you had much better training from them and confidence from them than what you did those earlier NCOs, officers and NCOs. That is my own opinion. and I think that it was a great thing. We had some Dutch officers come to us who had obviously seen quite a bit of action anyway. Probably not for a very long period, but they had seen action, and they were different. They knew how to go on. It was on the ranges, or on training, or getting transport. They didn't seem to believe in men having to march so much. If they could get transport, they tried to get transport for you, and they didn't have too much fuss. They were fighting men, and that was it.
How was discipline meted out and punishment?
I think some of the punishment was most ridiculous, really. And when I was in at Norfolk, I remember one chap in particular who had family trouble with his wife. He was a London chap, and the poor fella, he just couldn't get it out of his head. And I remember that he went on the run, and he came back, and our own regimental police, I think our CO gave him about, I'm not sure, 14 or 28 days CB, and our regimental police, they seemed to harass that chap so badly, and quite soon after, away he went again. He was in the same hut I was in, and he said to us, his wife bothered him so much that he had to get back, and it was so sad, really. In the finish, he went to Colchester, to the glass house, and when he came back from there, he said, "Well, whatever happens," he said, "with my wife, I can't go on the run anymore." But it was a thing where today the man would have had counselling for that. He would have he wouldn't have regimental police and that going, you know, sort of ill-treating him, as I thought. I mean, they used to have him out there in the morning and at the weekends. They used to have him out there with a pack loaded up with his full kit, and run him up and down a hill, up and down a hill, enough to drive the poor chap off his head, really. But they couldn't. It's the sort of thing that, thank goodness, has all been sorted out, I'm sure, today, and it shouldn't have been going on at that time. You have to have discipline, and I've always said that I believe in discipline, and I'm prepared to take it. Take discipline, but I think in cases like that, I think it was pretty cruel.
Had you experienced discipline at home?
Good discipline, yes, I had. My parents were very good, they were fair, but they did believe in discipline, and what they said they meant, and I think that was good. I think we were lucky. We never had any trouble in our family. You know, there was not my brothers or sisters. We never had any bad trouble, and I think that was the reason we were disciplined, and it was the best thing that could happen. Really.
No shocks in the army?
No, I didn't have any shocks, no.